This is WCNO Palm City, the good news station.
Ahoy, and welcome aboard Caleb's Canoe. We will be sojourning through the dangerous white water rapids of prophecy today. So put on your life vest of righteousness and hold tight to your steering paddle as we wade through the water of the Word of God. All right, now we're going to take a look at America's participation in the Ukrainian-Russian war. Now, we have to go back in history. In fact, what I'm going to be telling you, you won't hear on any of the major news medias. They pretty much have hidden this information. So pay attention, because I've delved deeply into getting to the bottom of what really caused the war in Ukraine. Now, in 1992, Ukraine signed the Lisbon Protocol. What was happening was, when the Russian when Russia broke up, you had a problem, because Ukraine ended up with thousands of nuclear weapons. And of course, the United States and also Great Britain and also Russia did not want them to have all these weapons. So it was a big problem. How do you get them to give them up? Well, they signed this Lisbon Protocol. They agreed to return the nuclear weapons they inherited from the Soviet Union back to Russia. But not the members of the Ukrainian parliament, they were a little bit worried about this. They said, wait a minute, if we give back all these nuclear weapons, okay, what's to prevent another Russia or the United States or anyone coming in and attacking us? And they were worried about this. They knew this for a fact. If they would have had thousands of nuclear weapons, there's no way on this earth that Russia would have attacked them just now. They would have been fearful of the fact of going nuclear, exactly why we're fearful of getting involved in this war with our own soldiers, because eventually it could then basically tumble into World War III. So what happened? So they were reluctant about this. Listen, we don't want to give up these weapons. Let us keep a few and so forth. But Russia and the Clinton White House worked feverishly to convince Ukraine to give up the nuclear weapons. And they ended up giving a lot of political pressure and also promised them a lot of money. Okay? So in 1994, Ukraine caved in. But the United States, Russia, and the United Kingdom signed an agreement to protect Ukraine in the event of a future attack. And get this, they give up the protection they had, which would have ensured protection forever by keeping the nuclear weapons. They gave them to Russia, but with a promise from the United States and Russia and the United Kingdom that no one would ever be allowed to attack them. It didn't seem to work out that way. The most critical part of the Ukrainian 1994 agreement was the so-called Budapest Memorandum on Security Assurances, which was later reaffirmed in 2009 by none other than President Barack Obama. Okay, now, what ended up happening? So in 2006, 2009, we had President Barack Obama then give Ukraine assurance, listen, don't worry, nobody's going to attack you, we'll come in and save you. Okay, but then what happened was, in 2014, there was a coup in Kiev, and it was there was a pro-Russian president, Viktor Yanukovych. And Viktor Yanukovych, he was an elected official, and he was overthrown. And what ended up happening was, we ended up getting a president who is now actually not elected at first. He was basically appointed, and I'll get into that in a minute. But let's just take a look at one of the players in this before we get into the details of that agreement. Ukrainian president, current president of Ukraine is Zelensky, Vladimir Zelensky. Okay, he actually got to fame by being an actor. He was a comedian. He rocketed to fame in 2010 to become one of Ukraine's top entertainers with a TV series called Servant of the People. He portrayed a lovable high school teacher fed up with the corrupt politicians, and he actually accidentally becomes president. And it kind of actually what ended up happening. Here's something interesting, though. He actually was campaigned and got elected. Now, remember, there was an appointed anti-Russian person first appointed, and then he then was elected. Now, he was elected, and he was basically talking about the corruption. Well, he was listed in the Pandora Papers. If you know what the Pandora Papers happens to be, it was a series of papers that were uncovered that showed that he was storing away in secret accounts all over the world. Well, there were a lot of people involved in this, not only him, but also people like Tony Blair and King Abdullah of Jordan and the Czech Republic, Prime Minister Andrew Babis, and the Kenyan president also. They were all storing away tons of money, okay? And he's actually campaigning against corruption. When this came out, he said, oh, listen, I had to do that because, listen, otherwise they would have confiscated my money and I wouldn't be able to become president and so forth. Well, anyway, so what actually caused this coup? And this is important to understand, okay? One of the things you have to see that's overriding, and it's you have to understand that Russia is sitting there, and they gave up all these countries, Poland and Romania and Ukraine and so forth. And now each of them were starting to then become part of NATO. Well, this is bringing nuclear missiles closer and closer to Russia. And having nuclear missiles from the NATO country in the Ukraine would have given them no warning whatsoever if they would have launched. They could have basically wiped them off the face of the earth. So who organized this coup? Well, the coup was organized by the U.S. government. Now, remember when we talked about the U.S. government organizing coups, over 50 of them, in fact, over the course of time since World War II? Okay, Russia's government reacted to the fact that we had this coup, and they then, shortly after that, they invaded and took over the Crimea. Why did they do that? Well, first of all, there was peace. There was peace because there was a pro-Russian president of the Ukraine. Russia was able to use the warm water ports in the Black Sea. They were he was amenable to them. There was no tension. There was peace and everything else. And then the United States, through a woman, Victoria Nuland, she was U.S. President Barack Obama's central agent overseeing the coup. In other words, Barack Obama sends Victoria Nuland over to the Ukraine, and they practice this. They practice this coup in our own ambassadors, basically is the campgrounds of the ambassadors, practiced exactly the coup that was to take place. So in February 14th, it climaxed. And what happened was the existing Ukrainian government that was elected by the people was overthrown. And install in its place was a Russian replacement. There was a person who replaced it was a rabidly anti-Russian replacement. And Russia then became very fearful. Okay, and that's why they invaded the Crimea and took that over. So it was basically caused not by Russia's aggression, but the United States exercising exactly what we talked about before. It's oligarchy, it's manifest destiny, it's imperialism. We didn't want the Russians to have any power whatsoever. We wanted to eliminate them from the Ukraine and get NATO right on the doorstep. And this actually caused the tensions that we see today. And so 2014, there's this coup. Russia then gets upset. And you know who was involved in the coup? Not only this Victoria Nuland, who President Barack Obama sent to overthrow them. Okay, and this is all documented. And you can see, read the Rogue Nation, read William Blum's books. He's got three of them on all this and how we do this and how we constantly are getting involved in other nations, replacing them with people who are more favorable to us. But also remember the oligarchy and the big money people. Eric Schmidt of Google and Jared Cohen, also of Google, but also continuing on, though unofficially as Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton's person, tasked the popular movements to overthrow both Yanukovych in the Ukraine and Assad in Syria. So Syria also, and this problem with Assad was also U.S. inspired. It was part of the U.S. policy to cause. And again, the military-industrial complex is certainly supportive of this because we're gaining those companies are making millions supplying information and providing weapons for all these countries. Now, what happened with this pro-maidens revolution that occurred that Patricia Noonan fostered? Okay, it started, it was really interesting, because really we hired snipers to shoot innocent policemen, which then started the policemen shooting back, and then this all struck out to 13,000 people dying. And it was all because of America embedding itself. And one of the things that we used to do this was what you hear. You just hear mention of this. You hear the Voboda Party. The Voboda Party formed and officially registered as a political party in Ukraine in October 1995. It was characterized as a radical right-wing populist party that combined elements of ethnic ultranationalism and anti-communism. During the 1990s, it was accused of neo-Nazism due to the party's involvement in skinheads and the uses of neo-Nazi symbols. You see, we actually use them. Now, you hear this mentioned from time to time. They say, oh, yeah, Russia says that it's neo-Nazis. Well, no one questions that. We just say, no, it wasn't. Well, it was. And there's evidence, and you can look at it and find the evidence that we actually used. Patricia Noonan used the Voboda Party to overthrow an elected official who was pro-Russian to put in an anti-Russian. This is all what it's about. This is why we have the war now. Okay, so this U.S.-backed coup in Ukraine, which began in 2011, and armed conflict began in February 2014 with an American-orchestrated coup between 2014 and 20, resulting in the killing of more than 13,000 innocent people. These are civilians in the Donbass region. So we see that this was a result of both Clinton and Obama and Biden's interference in Ukraine. And this war is not Putin's war, it's President Biden's war. And all the effects that are coming from that, the money he's getting from backhanded munitions producers such as Lockheed Martin and all the rest that are involved with this, he's just filling his pockets, and also are others. And it's not just, I'm not just picking on the Democrats, because the Republicans are involved in the industrial military complex too. They get money from both sides. So now we have this Victoria Noonan, American diplomat, currently serving as Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs. In other words, we rewarded her. In fact, there was a lot of outrage about this because she was responsible for spreading the fake Steele dossier, which basically was being used to try to impeach President Donald Trump when he was president. She was an anti-Trumper, and she fostered and promoted this Steele dossier, which was totally, as we know now, was all unfounded. And yet now she's the Undersecretary of Political Affairs. She was rewarded for her actions in causing this war. Again, this war is causing the death of tens of thousands of people on both sides. And you know, one of the interesting things about this, which people hardly ever bring up, but the fact is that, you know, that the Ukrainians are about 71% believers, Christians, okay? And Russia also around 70% believers. So we have Christians killing Christians. Now, also at the same time this is all going on, the Maiden Revolution, it was sponsored by Patricia Noonan under the direction of President then Barack Obama. This was all going on in 2013. And who was behind the scenes over in Ukraine making millions of dollars? Yeah, Hunter Biden. Okay, so from 2013 through 2018, Hunter Biden and his company brought in about $11 million via his roles as an attorney and a board member with a Ukrainian firm accused of bribery, which was later accused of bribery, and his work with a Chinese businessman who was now accused of fraud. This was all reported in NBC analysis of Biden's hard drive. Remember, his hard drive that was covered. So we see there's a connection of what's going on in Ukraine through both Hunter Biden and Biden himself. And we see that this war, as I'm going to say, and I'm going to say it very plainly, is Biden's war. And there's a reason behind it. There's multiple reasons behind it. One of them, of course, is the Green Party that is influencing President Biden. He wants to drive those prices of oil way up. as high as you can get them, so that then solar and electric cars and all can be the norm in America. And, you know, no one ever looks at the effects of the fact that to get the batteries, for example, the cobalt that's needed, it comes out of the Congo with child labor. There's a limit of the amount that we can actually produce. There's no way that every American can get a electric car unless we basically destroy the environment by strip mining to get all the materials needed to get the war. Now, in the midst of all this, we have Israel involved. And Israel is really in a bind here because they have basically synagogues both in Russia and in the Ukraine. And, of course, the president, of course, is Jewish himself. So they're in a big bind here because they don't want to. And so there's, you know, Biden comes out and he talks constantly about the fact that we're united against Russia in this. Well, China's not. No, they're buying the oil left and right that that Russia's producing. And India's not. Now, you look at India and China, you get about almost half the world right there. And then Israel also is trying to remain neutral. There's many nations now that are coming out saying we're neutral in this battle. They don't want to get involved. Remember, when you start limiting products to come into a country, you're not only affecting you're trying to get all them to change their mind and what they're doing, but really what you're doing is you're hurting people. You're hurting children. You're killing them, in essence. So what some of the things that you've seen on the news lately was, you know, there was a big a show of Russian, and they're upset now. So they came out with this big, basically a diagram they set out. And how many seconds does it take for a ballistic missile to reach London, Paris, or Berlin? That's the question pundits on Russian state TV were pondering on the war in Ukraine. We're basically showing how fast in a few seconds they could launch and destroy these nations. So you get the whole political concept coming across about nuclear war and what, how that can happen and so forth. So in 1990, after the Berlin Wall fell and Russia dominated Soviet Union, including Ukraine, all broke up, you see that NATO has been advancing state, country by country, getting closer to the border and broadening their influence against Russia. This is why they're responding the way they are. And if you remember back, and I lived through this, and I know it very well, was the Cuban Missile Crisis. If you remember back to the Cuban Missile Crisis, what happened was the United States at the time, okay, they found out that in Cuba, the Russians were putting in ballistic missiles that could reach the United States. And the United States, when they found this out, was appalled. And they basically said that, listen, this can't stand. And so what ended up happening, we almost went toe-to-toe with the Russians in nuclear war, which would have basically wiped out both countries and probably most of the world at the time. So what happened was, fortunately, our military wanted to go right in and attack the Cubans, not realizing that the Cubans also had small nukes that could have taken out any army that landed on their shore. They also had ballistic missiles that would reach much farther than we originally thought, basically covering most of the country. Not to mention the fact that one nuclear missile fired high in the atmosphere would basically fry our electronics for many years to come. You only have to have one do that. So we had this this tension, and I remember it very well. I remember being in high school, and I remember going to confessing all my sins because I thought any minute the war can break and everything's going to end. And well, why did we do that? Why did we have this big confrontation? Because we didn't want nuclear weapons close to our shore. This is exactly why Russia invaded Ukraine. They don't want them becoming part of NATO. They don't want nuclear missiles on their border. This is exactly what the United States almost went to war before. I wonder what would happen if the Soviet Union decided, well, okay, you're bringing NATO to our doorstep. We're going to put missiles back into Cuba. What would happen? Okay, so you can see they're referring to this. And, you know, I mentioned this before, and it's so sad because I'm looking right now at a slide of the churches in Russia and the churches in Ukraine, and they almost look identical. They have these steeples with a cross on the top. You know, the populations of both are in the 70%. And so what's ended up happening is we have Christians killing Christians. Just like in our own civil war where Christians were killing Christians. And one of the effects that is far-reaching, that we don't even realize is this war in Ukraine is affecting other nations far from there. For example, Ethiopia, Somalia, and Kenya. They expect that because of this war, if the food products are not delivered to them, you're expecting to have about 4 million Ethiopians die, about 2.5 million Somalians, and about 2.5 Kenyans die because of the shortage of food. And see, this whole concept of war, famine, pestilence, and death, the quadratic forces of evil in the world today, you can see that they affect each other. One causes another. So we have another reason why America has become so powerful is not just the military. And it's one of the things you have to understand, and when I speak of the dragon, many times that refers to basically civil power. You know, I would never have thought in my lifetime that I would see a president come out and say that you could not go to church and worship during the COVID epidemic. I would have thought that could never happen. So one of the things that I have come to the point is looking at America as become the Judas of Christianity. You remember Judas? Okay, his name in Greek means praise, let it be praised. Kind of a neat name. Remember, it was kind of interesting because he was, his name Judas Iscariot. Iscariot means he was from Iscariot or Kiroth, which is a city in Palestine, which is southern Judah. This is kind of interesting because the only single one of the 12 apostles who was not from Galilee was Judas. The only one. All the rest were from Galilee. And when you look at Zechariah, he predicted Jesus would be betrayed by 30 pieces of silver. Okay, he predicted Jesus would be betrayed from one who shared his bread. And we see that actually coming true. But money, remember Judas, he controlled the money bag. And one of the things that was said of Judas is that he helped himself to the money bag. In other words, he was a thief. Okay, and America's a thief in that respect. Because one of the reasons we're so great is because we basically beg our neighbor. We basically export a lot of the work to child labor. There's been lots of controversies about this. Even in recently, President Biden recently took the tariffs down on solar panels, and they're being made in China, and they're being made with forced labor. Where's our conscience concerning this? And, you know, one of the things that we see is the Federal Reserve, okay? We have a guy who is Ron Paul, and he's had a lot to say about that. It is no coincidence that the country of total war conceded with the century of central banking, the end of the Fed. What we really need to do is repeal 1913. That's when also we established the Fed. That we could get rid of the income tax and the Federal Reserve at the same time. This is Ron Paul talking. Okay, so the United States is not only a world power militarily, but also a world power because we control money. And who controls money supply controls the world. So we're part and parcel of that. And you can see that because after World War One and World War Two, the United States basically had almost all the world's gold. Why? Because all the allies had to pay for their weapons and for the help that we were given on the ships and so forth with gold. So what happened is after the war, remember, there was what's called the reserve currency. And up until the war, the British pound was the reserve currency of the world. But after the war, the United States dollar became the reserve currency. Now, so what happened was they wanted to return to the gold standard, but that was impossible for other countries to do because we had all the gold. So what they did, they met in 1944, the Allied countries met in Bretton Woods, New Hampshire, and they came up with the Bretton Woods decision, which basically said that the United States has all the gold, and we will then have the reserve currency of the dollar, and you'll be able to actually convert the U.S. dollar to gold. And this occurred all the way up from 1944. You could have had a U.S. dollar all the way up until 1971 and return it for its value in gold. No longer. Because what happened was Nixon in 1971 took us off the gold standard. And now what do we have? And now what we have is fiat money. And we have a $30 trillion deficit in growing every day. You know, it's kind of interesting when you think about it. When we say we're going to give $50 billion to the Ukrainians for weapons, We don't have $50 billion. So what do? We just print it. It comes from nowhere. Federal Reserve prints the money out, out it goes. But what happens to our dollar? You know, it's interesting. If you look at the value of a dollar back in 1913 and compare that same dollar's value today, it's worth about a penny. Okay, it's decreased by over 99 cents. Okay, so what we're looking at, again, America is being not only controlling the military of the world, but also the money of the world. And if you remember the verse that God says, you can't serve God and mammon, okay, that's in Matthew 6:24, also in Luke 16:13. Mammon is the name of a Syrian and Chaldean god. He was the Greek god of wealth. And you remember the whole concept, and we're looking at how wealth affects us in America. We have the verses in 1 Timothy 6:10. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, after which some have strayed from the faith and have pierced themselves through with many sorrows. So we see that this whole concept of money and how we're basically the world's controller of that, we see that it's been deflated. We see that now it's going to even continue on. And, you know, I couldn't help but think about the parable of the rich man who was dressed in purple and fine linen and luxury, and then there was this poor beggar at the gate. And then, of course, they both die, and the beggar is in Abraham's bosom. And, of course, the rich man is in hell, and he just wants a finger dipped. And, you know, the interesting thing is, he says, he answered, "Then I beg you, Father, send Lazarus to my family, for I have five brothers. Let them warn them about what is also to come in this place of torment." And what is, he said, answer in return, you know, even if I would send him back, even if somebody rises from the dead and comes back, that would not change things. And of course, it's kind of interesting because this is exactly what happened. So how do we then live? How do we live with all this information? Okay, there was a great man, Francis Schaeffer, who came out with exactly that. We have to live this way. We know that we're part of the beast. It doesn't mean that every American is an evil person. Just simply means that the controlling factor is the Ephesians 6:10. We wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and against powers. Okay, how should we then live? Return to the Christian foundation of our society or face increasing economic breakdown, war, and chaos of violence, radical redistribution of wealth, and growing shortage of food and nature. Return to the Lord. That's how we should then live. So, you know, one of the things that I want to give you is a ray of hope to all this, because we've been talking down America. And again, I have to remind you that I'm not talking about individuals. We're talking about the government. But there's a great verse in Revelation 21 right near the end. And it says this, "And God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes, and there shall be no more death, neither sorrow, nor crying, neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things are passed away." As you canoe through the river of life, may all your rapids be little ones. If you capsize, God can right you again. If you're drowning, God can throw you a line and a life raft. May the Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace. Amen. If you have questions or concerns or like to know more, you can contact me, LUVH2O, the O is a letter, 62, at Comcast.net.
I've been quiet for way too long. I can't find it. And it's time to tell, 'cause I just can't keep it to myself. Somebody give me a microphone or a megaphone or a telephone.